the Tanzanian coastal city of Dar es Salaam at noon on Wednesday, bound for the main island of Zanzibar, which is a semi-autonomous territory in the Indian Ocean that lies off the East Africa coast. Tanzanian authorities said 145 people have been rescued out of an estimated 280 passengers, including some 30 children. News video showed the sea craft completely upside down with a small group of people standing on its upturned hull, waiting for rescue by helicopters and Navy ships. This is the second ferry boat disaster in less than a year. Last September, an overcrowded boat sank off Zanzibar, killing more than 200 passengers. John Burnett, NPR News, Nairobi.
I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org.
Programs on WILL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting you to visit the Promenade Gift Shop for artfully affordable and exceptionally eclectic gifts. More information on upcoming events is at KrannertCenter.com.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. It's hour two of the show. The following program comes from the Focus Archives, which means for the next hour, we will not be taking your calls.
A few years ago, Linda Watson was inspired by a food stamp challenge. This was the challenge: live on a budget of $1 per meal for 1 week. She noticed many of those who took up the challenge, including some politicians, were not eating well. They were eating inexpensively, but they were filling up on empty calories. As a result of what she saw, she began developing strategies for eating well on an extreme budget. She and her husband found it was doable. They liked the foods they were eating. They also found they felt better. And that led her to found Cook for Good and write a cookbook. The cookbook was published last month by DeCapo Press. The title, Wildly Affordable Organic: Eat Fabulous Food, Get Healthy, and Save the Planet, all on $5 a day or less. While the emphasis in the title is organic, and there is a plan for going organic on $5 a day, there's also what Watson calls her thrifty plan, where you can eat well for about $3.25 a day. Linda Watson, welcome. Thank you so much for talking with us this morning.
Well, Les, what a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure, my pleasure. Well, at the outset, would you share an example of what might be on a menu, breakfast through dinner, if we were practitioners of wildly affordable?
That's a great question. Let me share with you what I had yesterday. I would start the day with a slice, two slices of my toasted whisk bread, which is a whole wheat bread that you can make in 20 minutes a day, active time, with peanut butter on top. I'd have lunch, perhaps high-protein rotini, so some sort of high-protein noodle with a homemade tomato sauce. So I had roasted red tomatoes with green peppers and onions yesterday, a side of green beans vinaigrette, some fruit. I would have a snack, a couple of cookies for a snack. And then for dinner, I had Cuban black beans on brown rice, with another side dish, grilled yellow squash. So I grill that one day and cook it, eat it twice. So I have it hot one day and cold the next day, and then peach cobbler for dessert. So you can see it's a very balanced diet. I'm getting well more than my five vegetables and fruits every day, and it's completely delicious.
Yeah. Now, here's an important question to ask, and I've got a listener who already wants to join in. But, you know, we've done some reporting here at WILL about food deserts and food insecurity. Have you worked with people who have difficulties accessing healthy foods, the kinds of things that you are urging us to eat in wildly affordable organic?
Absolutely. It's a huge problem. Joel Berg with the New York City Coalition Against Hunger says there are three legs to the hunger stool. I work on one of those, which is, once you have food, how do you make the most out of it? But the other problems are having enough money to buy the food that's available and the simple availability of foods. I've taught at food banks and clinics across the country, and I can tell you that those food deserts are real, and they're not just urban. They are sometimes worse out in the agricultural areas where all the farms grow nothing but corn or soy.
And that's what we've found here as well. We did a series this summer called Life on Route 150, where we took this U.S. Route 150 and used it as a guide for our reporting. And out in small, very small communities and out in rural areas, food insecurity is a problem.
It sure is. That sounds like a fascinating series.
And you can find it on our website, willconnect.org, a little plug there. Well, let's take that call now. This is a listener in Champaign County on line one. Hi.
Good morning, all. I just recently read a book called The 4-Hour Body, and this author was advocating not to drink milk, including soy milk, because of the calories. And I just wondered if you would comment on that, and I have another question about fruit.
Well, I love the author of The 4-Hour Body. He also wrote The 4-Hour Work Week, which is,
yes.
Both of those books are a complete hoot and very interesting to read. He's interested in extreme and artificial nutrition. That's not what I'm about. This is very real food, no trans fats, no artificial colors, no artificial preservatives, nothing like that. So I'm not worried about the calories. He's going after a crazy muscular body and just a whole nother. You want to be a superhero? You can do the 4-hour body.
And I really don't. I drink roughly two cups of skim, one cup of soy milk at lunchtime, and the soy gives the skim a little bit of taste in the body, and so I thought, gee, I have to give that up, and so. What you're saying, it's extreme, I can possibly disregard that.
But let me just say, I don't recommend, in my plan, you aren't drinking milk as a beverage. My beverages are water and home-brewed tea.
Oh.
I think Americans drink a lot of milk that they don't need to drink.
Oh.
So I use it as an ingredient in puddings and desserts, but I don't use it as a beverage. I get my protein from beans and other sources, and there can be some real issues with the health consequences of milk. I'd urge you to take a look at the China study, for example, before you drink too much milk.
Oh.
And soy can be a problem for men in particular, so watch that soy intake as well.
Oh.
But what do you have to ask about fruit?
Okay. Well, with fruit, he was recommending not to eat fruit because, it turns into sugar and that turns into triglycerides and fat storage. And so I thought, gee, I thought there was an encouragement to eat a lot of fruit, you know.
No, you get a lot of nutrition from fruit. It's very satisfying. I have dessert every day on my plan, and some people say, well, how can this be a healthy diet? Well, it's because I use fruit as the sweetener. So, again, if you're after looking like the Incredible Hulk, then the 4-Hour Body probably has something for you. I haven't read it yet, but that's not a regular sustainable diet for a family. I'm after, here's something you can eat the rest of your life. People love it, from kids to old people, everyone in between, foodies, people who are just interested in getting a good meal on the table. I'm after more normal food, and fruit is absolutely part of that diet.
Yeah. Well, isn't the new plate plan, doesn't it include like half as fruit and half veggies?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
And I map very well to that.
Okay, good. Okay. Thanks a lot, Linda. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for the call this morning. Other questions, comments are invited. You can join us with a phone call or by email. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-9455. That's the toll-free number. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, what is the place of sweets in the diet?
Oh, I think sweets, Celeste, signal you that you've had a complete meal and that all is well in your world. So I am very much about controlling portion size. For example, one of my regular desserts is carrot cake. I love carrot cake. I make it with white whole wheat flour, so it's a lighter flour that doesn't taste like a whole wheat cake, but it has all that nutrition. Carrots, oil instead of butter. And then on top, instead of using a cream cheese frosting, I glaze it with a little bit of butter, brown sugar, and ginger for a real tropical punch. Now, you have a cupcake of that. You've had a nice treat. You're feeling good, but you don't add the extra calories or the extra expense to your life.
Hmm. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Urbana, line one. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for this opportunity. Can you please enlighten me in the area of fat burners? I subscribe to a magazine about, it's called, I don't know if I can say the name, but it's about working out, and they always have these extraordinary announcements and advertising on fat burners, and they show the most beautiful models with zero fat. And I was wondering if I'm skeptical to believe that there's a pill that would sculpt a body this way. Could you shed some light on that issue?
I think your skepticism is well-founded. Absolutely. Please don't believe in the pill. Here's what's worked for me and worked for so many of my followers. We eat real food, cooked from scratch, seasonal food, and by focusing on thrift, we find that we are eating the right portion sizes and eating low on the food chain. So if you eat a lot of beans, brown rice, a high-protein rotini, plenty of fruits and vegetables, small but delicious servings of fruit, you will achieve your ideal body weight without any suffering, without any pain or extra expense. When we first did this challenge, we found that we lost about a pound a week with no hunger or any paying attention of it. It just fell right off. I've reached my ideal weight, and here I stay for 3 years. So it is not a diet. It's a lifestyle that you need to look for.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. This caller reminds me we're so interested and worried and anxious about food, and we really need to kind of relax and just eat real food. And I also would like to put in a plug here for seasonal food, and that's something that you talk about in the book as well. Seasonal food is tasty, and it's less expensive.
Absolutely. You get the best value and the best flavor, as well as the best nutrition, just by buying what's in season. And it's another way to support your local economy. Part of my book is about how to save money and eat delicious food, but another part of it is about making a difference. And one of the ways you can make that difference to help the farms in your community thrive, to help those people have jobs, and to help them keep the money in the community is to go to your farmer's market or go to your regular grocery store, buy what's in season and what's been grown near you. You'll love the food, and your community will love you for it.
Mm-hmm. What is Cook for Good, and how did you come to found that organization?
Well, I started 4 years ago. I had retired from politics. I was just lounging about, traveling. My husband's a photographer, and we were having a fabulous time. But I was reading the paper, and two big trends really caught my eye. One was the food stamp challenge. That was a very worthwhile project 4 years ago in which anti-hunger activists said, you know, the food stamp allowance has not been raised in 9 years. Something needs to be done. Let's all try to live on the average amount of that food stamp challenge, which is $1 a meal per person, and show people how hard it is, and that will inspire the government to raise the amount. And, in fact, that has been raised since. That was part of the stimulus package. But the people on that challenge, a lot of them had a great difficulty doing it. That you would hear stories of people eating ramen that they'd made at breakfast. They were eating it 6 hours later, so it was falling apart, sitting next to someone eating a sandwich from Carnegie Deli that was a huge, giant sandwich, and they were so jealous. And one of the congressmen who took it tried it. He didn't know what sort of coffee to buy. His peanut butter was seized by TSA when he tried to get on a plane, so he wound up sneaking a pork chop and some airline peanuts to get through. And I thought, these people aren't cooks. It's hard to make it on a very low budget, but it's not that hard, and I wanted to try it from that point of view. At the same time, Michael Pollan, the Omnivore's Dilemma person, was everywhere, and one of the things he was saying was good food has to be expensive, and you should avoid the center of the store. So I put those two together, and I thought, well, the reason Michael Pollan thinks good food is expensive is because he doesn't go to the center of the store. where the dried beans are and the rice and the flour so you can make your own bread. You don't need to just stay on the outside where the food rots. And if you'll do that, then your food is less expensive. So I proposed to my husband, let's try it for just 3 weeks. Try this food stamp challenge and try not to show that it's difficult, but let's see if we could show that it can be easy. And I learned a lot in the last 4 years to make it easy, and I think now that a dollar a meal is too low, but that $5 a day, even mostly organic food, is very approachable for most families.
Hmm. And do you do this with coupons or clubs or a garden or a great big pantry?
No. Well, a great big pantry, yes. I limit my budget to 1 month's worth of budget at a time, 1 month's worth of money at a time, just like the food stamp program itself. So that was a problem, actually, a secret problem with the food stamp challenge is if you do it for just a week, you can't take advantage of even the discount you get by buying a full pound of butter instead of just 2 sticks or a reasonable amount of oil and that sort of thing. So I do shop a month at a time with trips in between to buy fresh produce. But I don't use coupons. I don't use any sort of warehouse store or anything like that. And, in fact, if I find a deal that is so great at my local farmer's market that I think other people won't be able to find it, I don't include that in my pricing. So these are conservative, coupon-free pricing. And I don't reflect the savings you can have if you can buy in advance. For example, something I would recommend your listeners to do, buy green peppers right now, cut those up, freeze them, freeze blueberries, and in the winter when produce prices are higher, you can pay even less than $5 a day because you will have bought that food at the seasonal peak.
How time intensive is this?
It's not bad at all once you get organized. If you do my entire plan, you'll find yourself spending about an hour and a half one day making yogurt, starting up bread and pizza dough, soaking some beans, and 3.5 hours the next day to make all sorts of desserts, finish those meals and so forth, and then a little bit of preparation and warming up through the week. It's most intensive at the beginning of the month when you've done your big shopping, and then it trails off. So 5 hours that first week, less throughout the rest of the time. And I've compared that to eating out every meal,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's actually less. If you think about it, Celeste, when you want to go out to eat, you have to decide where to go, you have to get there, you have to wait in line, sometimes you have to wait to be served, you have to wait for the bill, wait to pay the bill. It all adds up. I'd rather spend that time at home listening to NPR and cooking in the kitchen.
But let's go back to 2007 and the first few days of this journey. What was it like?
Oh, it was so interesting. I had decided to do the challenge. My husband bought into it. He said, let's try it. Let's see how hungry we get. I got a call back from a job that I used to have, so that was perfect. I was working 50 hours a week again. It took me 2 hours to go grocery shopping for the first week's worth of food because I only had $42 to spend. That's a dollar a meal for two people for a week. And I kept having to I would fill up my cart and I'd have to put things back and readjust my menus. Then the first morning, I had made bread the night before in my bread machine, and I used the cheaper yeast, but I didn't realize it was not bread machine yeast. So my bread was only about an inch tall, and my poor, adorable husband comes down first thing in the morning, and he looks at that bread and he looks at me, and in his morning voice he says, "We're already doomed."
doomed as doomed can be.
Oh, it was. But you know, that first day was bad. I wound up with a headache because I bought cheaper tea, which had less caffeine, and I had a caffeine headache. The bread, I managed to hack it apart, so we had this sort of very crusty bread. But by the end of that first week, we're sitting out on our porch eating that carrot cake that I told you about earlier, that ginger glazed carrot cake that has a recipe in my book, Wildly Affordable Organic. And he says, "Honey, we've got to talk." And I thought, oh, no, he's going to leave me for a woman who will give him cheesecake. This is bad, isn't it? So, okay, honey, what do you want to say? Well, I haven't wanted to mention this. Oh, no. But I'm feeling really good. I'm sleeping less. My mood has elevated. I've got a lot of energy. I've lost a pound. And except for that first stupid day with that horrible bread, I haven't been hungry. The food has been awesome. This cake is great. I think you're on something that we don't want to go back. I think this is how we should live. Let's not make it 3 weeks. Let's keep going.
Yeah. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So I said, you know, you're right. And I've lost 2 pounds, and we don't have any trash anymore. So instead of having, you know, the frozen Annie's enchiladas, which are delicious, by the way, a box and all that, you know, all this packaging and everything, we had almost no trash. We knew we were eating lower on the food chain. I knew that if I extended the budget just a little bit, I could start supporting my local farmers in season. And we realized that this could help us financially and as environmentalists. Mm-hmm.
This is Focus. This morning we're talking with Linda Watson. She's the founder of Cook for Good, and she is the author of Wildly Affordable Organic, Eat Fabulous Food, Get Healthy, and Save the Planet, all on $5 a day or less. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with a phone call or by email, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. We have an email message for you, Linda, and it begins, "Hi, Linda. It's not a diet, it's a lifestyle. Thank you for repeating that. I have two related questions. One, can you comment on the state of school lunches and recent efforts to introduce more organic and locally grown produce into schools? Do you think this initiative will succeed, given that so many schools don't have kitchens in their buildings where they can prepare fresh food? And two, do you have any tips for parents who want to pack healthy lunches for their kids? Thank you."
Great. Those are both great questions. I have been to some of my local schools and eaten at the cafeterias, and recently went to a meeting here in North Carolina, where I'm based, where they have a fantastic new farm-to-school program that is allowing them to buy local food and get that into the schools. But yes, it's a problem for schools that are built without kitchens to prepare that. So one way to get around that is to serve local food that doesn't need on-site preparation. For example, you could serve fruit that is washed and eaten out of hand. You can also make sure that the local or whoever is preparing the food that is used in the school is getting it locally. So it doesn't have to be made at the school to be prepared from local ingredients and served at the school. I would very much urge parents to contact their school boards and ask them to serve healthier lunches, healthier food that is more organic and more local food. That can be done if you'll reach out and make sure that that happens. And it helps the tax base for the schools. So I think that that's a point worth raising. For parents, first of all, make sure you pack a snack. That's the easiest first step that you can do. So in my 20-minute-a-day starter plan, I set aside time to bag up walnuts and raisins, to slice up some carrots, and to make green pepper sticks or other little vegetable snacks that can be tossed in. So if you can replace a candy bar with some walnuts and raisins, you are really towards a step of better nutrition. But you can also make wonderful food that packages well. If someone has a chance to heat up the food, then you can just basically serve more of whatever you had the night before. So when I have, say, my spicy peanut noodles with seasonal vegetables at night, I have that for lunch the next day, even at room temperature. The high-protein rotini with the tomato sauce, I like to heat that up, but it doesn't need to be heated up. You can always make bean burritos, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with that homemade whole wheat bread that's so easy to make. Just make sure that you pack a balanced lunch with fruits, vegetables, and don't forget, even bean salad can be low-fat, high-fiber, and high-nutrition.
Do you find that people tell you that their kids just aren't interested in eating a bean salad, thank you very much, or not interested in dealing with a whole apple or whatever?
The that's a two-part question. So let me say yes and no to that.
Okay.
Actually, no and yes. Kids love this diet. It's something that I was a little concerned about because I was used to cooking for adults. I have kids come over to visit and so forth, but I wasn't sure how this would appeal to the average child. When I do demonstrations at farmers markets, even babies in arms, 1.5 or 2 years old, come back for seconds of my spicy peanut noodles or my potato peanut curry because they love that peanut butter flavor. Kids will eat cardboard if you put peanut butter on it. So try that spicy peanut noodle dish. That's a really good way to get vegetables and other high nutrients into the kids. They love the flavors, the colors, the textures. As long as the parents eat it with enthusiasm, the kids will eat with this. And so many parents have written to me and thanked me for getting their kids to eat healthy food and get them off that pretty tasteless and bland junk food. So that's one. The other problem, the whole apple, you know, that might be a problem. So the trick is just cut up that apple, dip it in a little bit of water with lemon juice so that it doesn't turn brown, and serve it as apple pieces. I cut up peaches, I cut up pears, serve a banana. You don't want the food to be so intimidating that a small child can't get his teeth into it. But if you make it bite-sized and put it in cute little packages, then they'll absolutely eat it.
Yeah, I think I don't care for those little packaged meals at the grocery store that are marketed to children, but I understand the appeal of them because they're little pieces. And you have a cracker and you have a little piece of cheese and you have a little piece of meat and you have a little whatever, and it's pretty friendly for children who have little fingers and little mouths.
Absolutely. So take a sandwich and cut it into quarters.
Yeah.
You know, make your carrot strips, instead of making them your size, cut them one extra time and make it something that a small mouth can bite. And if you just put yourself in their place for a minute, I think it's easy to see how you can make the food small and child-friendly. And the flavors are and colors are absolutely already there.
Yeah, yeah. I guess take a cue from the Japanese and the bento box.
Yes, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Here's another email question. With a two-parent dual-income family with two children at home, what could you give us in the way of three nuggets of advice for those who feel time is such a precious commodity? Are there a lot of things that the kids could help with, or a section in the book that addresses where kids can help?
Oh, that's great to have the kids helping with that. Yes, the very first step I would ask anyone to take, and this is fantastic for people with kids, make a pot of beans every week. And this will save you so much time, so much money. It's a way to make your own fast food. So depending on the age of the kids, you would let them help you sort the beans. When you buy dried beans, you have to lay them out on a plate and pull them towards you looking for any non-bean-like objects, a stone, a twig, a mummy bean that's all wrinkled and will never cook. That's a really fun thing to do, and you can get different types of beans. So do black beans, kidney beans. Go to Rancho Gordo if you have those two incomes and order some of those amazing heirloom beans that are so colorful and beautiful. So show the children the variety. Kids love transformation. So I love showing them, here's a dry bean, here's what it's like when it's soaked, here's what it's like when it's done, so they can see that magic. They are excellent at handling and helping you prepare vegetables. So in sugar snap season, have them string those sugar snaps. That's something that they can eat out of hand, so it's immediate reward, and they're helping the family. They can perhaps peel carrots, other food preparation ideas like that. And then I think the desserts are a really great place to involve the kids, too. So one of my favorites is my hot milk cake that is a recipe from my beloved mother-in-law. Shout out to Catherine Watson right now. She makes the best strawberry shortcake in the world. And this hot milk cake is a basis for that. It's very easy to make. You can put it together in under 20 minutes. The fun comes from watching the chemistry as you stir the hot milk in with the baking soda and watch that cake inflate. And then it bakes very quickly. You cut it in half, put fresh fruit on it. It'd be delicious with peaches this time of year, too.
Mm, and the peaches are here.
They are.
Can you go to the book and share that recipe with us? I think it's...
Yes, it's the hot... It would be the strawberry shortcake recipe.
And it's called hot milk cake.
Yeah.
Let me find it.
I'm flipping through here, too.
Okay, here's the shortcake recipe.
Okay, so page 224 in the book.
And
225. And then 225 is the hot milk cake that's right next door.
Okay. So, yeah, this, could you kind of run it down for us?
Oh, sure, absolutely. I'm sorry. Yeah, so take it. The ingredients are 1/2 cup of milk, 1 tablespoon of butter, butter for the pan, 2 large eggs, 1 cup of sugar, 1 cup of all-purpose or white whole wheat flour, 1 teaspoon of baking powder. I said baking soda earlier, but it should be baking powder, and 1/8 teaspoon of salt. So here's how you do it. Preheat your oven to 375, then you heat up the milk until it begins to steam. I put it in a Pyrex measuring cup in the microwave. So just zap that in the microwave and put the butter in, and the butter will melt. Grease and flour an 8-inch square pan, or, and here's your cupcakes again, a 12-cup muffin pan. You put the eggs in a mixing bowl and beat them on medium-high until they turn light and thick, about 1 minute. So there's a fun transformation right there. Crack those eggs. Show the kids how great those pastured eggs are from good chickens instead of the factory eggs, which are going to have smaller and paler yolks. That's a really fun lesson right there. Beat those eggs. They become light. Add the sugar and beat them about 2.5 minutes. Sift the flour, baking soda, and salt together. You fold the sifted ingredients into the egg mixture, and then you fold in the hot milk and the butter. You work really quickly, and this is the fun transformation part. It gets so foamy, and it just swells up in your bowl. All of this mixing in takes just a minute. Pour it in the pan and bake it for 20 to 25 minutes. That's it.
Okay, very good. Hot milk cake. If you're just joining us, this is Focus. We're talking this morning with Linda Watson, founder of Cook for Good. She is the author of Wildly Affordable Organic, Eat Fabulous Food, Get Healthy, and Save the Planet, all on $5 a day or less. This is Focus. We have another email question or comment. Linda, your ideas work well for people who have fully equipped kitchens, experience cooking, and knowledge about what is healthy. What about people who don't have the tools to cook or who have never made anything harder than ramen? What if people don't know how to choose healthy foods or plan a budget or menu? How do you teach people, like a young teenage mom who dropped out of school and not only doesn't know how to cook, but grew up eating out every meal?
That is such an important question these days, and that is exactly the audience that I wrote this book for. I think it's of interest to people who love food and are experienced cooks like myself. I've got really fun recipes and have extended some ideas and so forth. But I'm aiming this at people who don't know how to cook. And that's why I start with a description of how do you go shopping? What do you buy? How do you go to the farmer's market and negotiate that? How do you get the best use out of your grocery store? I've got a list of 20 scrimp and splurge choices. So what would you save on? Would you save on olive oil or vinegar? I say you scrimp on olive oil and splurge on vinegar, but I learned that, and I want to share that with the readers. The book also has 4 seasonal menu plans, the shopping list that go with that, the complete shopping list, including salt, things that you might not think to buy, or oregano, all your spices, and then a very efficient cooking plan that goes with that so that you, for example, if you make yogurt, you use that pan that had the hot milk for the yogurt in it to make pudding. So you've made 2 recipes, but you just wash 1 pot. I am really hoping to reach folks who don't know how to cook, but maybe they grew up in households where there was no cooking. That's so common these days. And It's very easy to get started. I have videos on my website, cookforgood.com, a free newsletter with a recipe every week to help people get started. And I would invite your readers to, or listeners to, take my challenge. I'm starting a challenge this Saturday. So you get an email every day, and the recipes are all in Wildly Affordable Organic. With this, we're going to cook using the 20 minutes a day plan for 1 week, and then do another whole week with the core, complete cooking from scratch plan. So I have a special menu for that that helps you get ramped up. And then if you're all charged up in August, you can go forward and do the whole plan.
Mm. One of the tips that I gleaned from your book is check out various areas of a supermarket. So maybe you might stroll down the ethnic aisle or and see what's there and how the prices compare in terms of herbs and spices and those kinds of ingredients. Also, you can find in some areas of a supermarket, you might find things in bulk or packaged much more lightly, if I might use that word. I'm struggling here, but it, you know, you don't buy a jar, you buy a cellophane package of, let's say, cumin.
That's such a great point, and that was one of the biggest revelations to me in researching this book, was that within a grocery store, I could cost compare. I always thought, in order to be a very efficient shopper and really, you know, really get that bottom dollar, that I would have to go to multiple stores. But that takes a lot of time, and these days it takes a lot of expensive gas. So you don't really save money that way. But within my grocery store, I could find perhaps three different prices for vanilla, several different prices for rice or peanut butter or, like you said, all the bulk material. Always check the bulk prices for beans, rice, raisins, anything like that, and spices are the best deal with bulk. On a related note, I found that the stores that are often seen as being, you know, too expensive for the general populace, that, you know, the yuppie stores that have the organic food, they have excellent bulk sections and bulk spices that are often much less expensive than what you would consider to be an average grocery store.
Another thing that you can get affordably when it comes to organics is if you buy bulk, because you're buying, let me think if I can get this out. you're buying it bulk, so you're not buying packaging, it's more affordable. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it really does. And in general, the stores will put in the bulk sections that food which moves quickly. So you're getting the quantity discount for that, and you're not paying for the labor, the transportation, and just the packaging that goes with all that packaging. So think about beans, for example. Beans are my hot topic. I love beans. Please, everybody out there, pot of beans every week. The difference in price between a can of beans and the equivalent in dried beans is 4 to 1. So if you want to cut your grocery bill by 75% in that one instance, the trick is to cook from dried beans. And if you'll get them in the bulk section at a store that has a high turnover, you'll get fresher beans and they'll cook more quickly.
Mm. Let's go back to the phones and let's take a call from a listener in Lafayette, Indiana, line 4. Good morning.
Good morning. I take your worries about milk, and you mentioned some danger or limitation of soy milk that I didn't catch.
Oh, thank you for bringing that up. There have been a lot of studies about soy, and I think that whole question is up in the air right now about what the health benefits or risks can be of soy. The benefits are widely publicized by the people who make soy products, and soy is a very lucrative and frequently grown crop here in the United States. So you'll hear a lot about how great soy is. But there have been many studies that show that the phytoestrogens, the false estrogens in soy, can have a dramatic effect on humans. It's most risky, I believe, for people who are, for children. So I would very much, if I were a parent with a young child, I would do my research on soy. It can bring girls into puberty earlier, and it can cause feminization of boys. So those are some of the studies that really scare me.
I believe I've seen milk, which is neither soy nor dairy.
Oh, yes, you can get almond milk and hemp milk. There's all sorts of other things. Now, the problem with some of those, from a nutritional point of view, is you'll have less protein. So use the almond milk, but make sure you're eating more other sorts of beans or rice or something else to get your protein. So don't go short on your protein, but that's a great alternative.
Other question is for you to check and verify or review that tomato, for one thing, is useless to the body only if cooked down into a paste?
Oh, I don't... it's full of vitamin C and fiber and all sorts of good nutrients, so I'm not sure where that's coming from. But let me say I'm not a nutritionist. I've done a lot of reading on this. My book is well footnoted, so throughout Wildly Affordable Organic, you'll see lots of references. But I'm not a nutritional expert, so anybody who has serious nutritional questions should go see an expert on that.
Okay.
I wish I knew the answer to that one.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Thanks for that.
Let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign. Line one, hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I never thought today compete with email, but it's happening a lot of the time. I just have a list of a few things in terms of reaction. My daughter and her family moved to Greensboro, North Carolina, about 3 years ago. And she loves it. Okay, let's see now. North Carolina State has an interesting outreach program, I believe, in terms of for markets, developing local markets, that kind of thing, which is pretty progressive. Is that true?
Yes, they do. And I'm a proud member of the Center for Environmental Farming Systems and their 10% local campaign. It's a wonderful way to encourage people to spend at least 10% of their grocery dollar with local farmers. And we say that if we will do that, that we will keep billions of dollars in the state. So when you think about where you're buying your food and who gets that money, do you want that to go to farmers in your area, or do you want that to go to farmers in other states or other countries? We'd like to keep at least some of that here, and it's a great, great program. So 10% local, the Center for Environmental Farming Systems. Thank you.
And the other one is Asheville the largest farmers market or something or other? It's pretty huge, isn't it, or not?
It's enormous. I live in just an amazing food area, actually Bon Appetit, called Durham, my neighboring town, one of the foodiest little towns in America a couple of years ago. We have a very large farmers market here, the state farmers market, which is open 7 days a week. I think it's closed on Thanksgiving and Christmas, and that's about it. But we also have an increasing number of smaller farmers markets that feature often more sustainable, also locally grown, but more sustainable and organic food. Those are in developed shopping center parking lots. They're at outside of businesses. There are a lot of cities are having them in their downtowns. Many areas have, like the Durham Farmers Market or the Cary Farmers Market. So it's just hopping with farmers market here, and I hope it is in your area too.
Okay, and then just quickly a couple. Goat's milk, that's going to be a hard one for me. I don't drink a lot of it, but a small amount.
Goat's milk, I've never had goat's milk. It's not on my thrifty list or my organic list, so if you enjoy it, go for it. But that's not on my shopping list.
You could get a goat, that kind of thing.
Now, that would be thrifty.
And then the other one is that I make almond milk, but I have a Vitamix. And what happens is fairly inexpensive from that standpoint, and so rather than milk, I use that. Sometimes, too, in terms of organic, if you go with the transition, those are almonds or in other words, price maybe, what is it, 40% less while they're in transition to organic. And then, let's see, lastly, what do I have here? Oh, and you don't eat out at all?
Oh, yes, I do. I'm a flexitarian in so many different ways. So when I did this test, the first 3.5 months, I lived completely and strictly on this plan so that I could have a real test. I wanted to see if it was possible, if it was affordable, and if I got hungry, you know, what was the real effect? And I had a physical before and after. The physical after was flying colors. So I absolutely did that. Now, as a matter of course, I eat this way about 90-95% of the time. I do have the occasional treat. I do eat out some, mostly as a way to rent space to spend time with friends or to meet business people, because I work at home, so it's convenient to go to a restaurant. But as you become a better cook, you will find that your food is better than most restaurant foods. And once you realize that you can make amazing food for just a couple of dollars, it's hard to spend $40 at a restaurant for food you don't enjoy as much, with the whining kid next door and that woman with all that strong perfume at the next table. I love eating at home.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Next, we take a call from a listener on line 2 in Urbana. Hi.
Hi. I wonder if anywhere in your book you talked about growing herbs in pots. I've recently joined the local herb society, and it really is amazing what you can grow herb-wise in pots. And I would think even people who live in public housing or in large apartment complexes, there is somewhere that you can put a couple of pots. And if you get fresh herbs in the store, they're not very fresh and they don't last very long and they're expensive, and dried herbs are expensive too. So if you haven't already put that in, I would really recommend it.
You are so right. I completely agree with you. I do have a section called Save Even More, and that talks about some of the areas that are not included in my budget plan,
mm-hmm.
but that you could save more, and one of them is grow your own.
So, yeah.
And I list some particular choices. You're right about the herbs, basil in particular. I love pesto, so
mm-hmm.
I would say grow basil. And also, I find it very hard to find organic green beans. So in containers, you could have a big, you know, fairly hefty container, put up some of those green bean towers and grow a lot of green beans.
Yeah, you could. I have another question. I've taught the kind of people that are, I think, your audience who pick up breakfast at McDonald's and lunch at McDonald's.
Yes.
And you know, this is full of fat and sugar and salt, and those are kind of addictive. How do you get people to make a transition from that to healthy food?
You know, I think that the hook that I'm looking for really is thrift. There are plenty of books and authors out there who say you should eat, you know, this way or that way because it's healthy and because it's delicious and to save money and to save the planet. I say look at thrift first. In these economic times, I'm attracting a lot of readers that way, and who wouldn't like to have some more money, whether it's to pay your rent or to go to Paris?
Ah.
Once you try that food, you'll say, wow, look at that. I was able to have Cuban black beans for 37 cents a serving, and now I can go to the movies with my extra money. And those Cuban black beans were delicious. You get started, and then you say, well, I'll try making that carrot cake. I'll try making those peanut butter cookies. Every step you take is delicious, and you just won't want to go back.
Very good. And what's your website again?
Thank you. It's cookforgood.com.
Okay.
And I have, a free weekly newsletter, and you can learn about the challenge, which starts this Saturday. So thanks so much. I hope you'll sign up.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks for the call this morning. You know, organic today may be priced the same as conventionally grown produce, or it may be more expensive. When there's a significant difference in price, what's important? What are the organic foods that deserve our attention and perhaps their higher price?
The easiest rule of thumb to use in the store is if you can peel it, it doesn't have to be organic. I mean, I would love to buy everything organic, but sometimes there's availability issues, and of course, as you said, price can be a huge issue. So Bananas, you peel bananas, get the transitional, the fair trade bananas that aren't organic if you can, or buy regular bananas and save that extra money so that you can buy organic blueberries and strawberries, which you can't peel. Same thing, organic lettuce, you'd want that over, say, an organic, over an onion, which you're absolutely going to peel.
And in your book, in addition to the organic plan, you have what you call a thrifty plan. Just tell us a little bit about that, and we're running out of time pretty quickly now.
I use the same menus, but I make some trade-offs for how I price the ingredients and what I get. So I would say the $5 day plan has organic potatoes or at least organic-style potatoes, and the other one uses conventionally grown potatoes. The two ingredient switches that I make, I use real lemon instead of fresh lemons. And there's one more I can't remember. I'll tweet it for everybody. But it's basically the same menus. It's just I'm using good ingredients that are conventionally grown. That's the thrifty plan, $3.25 a day, cook for good.
Okay, cookforgood.com. And if I might, on our website, may I post your recipe for Cuban black beans?
Oh, yes, please do. I'd love that.
Okay, and we'll put a link there to your website.
Thank you so much. Okay. I appreciate it.
Linda, thank you so much for talking with us this morning.
It's been a great pleasure, Celeste. Thank you, and thanks to all your listeners.
Linda Watson is the founder of Cook for Good. She's also the author of Wildly Affordable Organic, Eat Fabulous Food, Get Healthy, and Save the Planet, all on $5 a day or less. The publisher is DeCapo Press.
You've been listening to a program from the Focus Archives. Much of our local production, including past interviews from Focus and local news features, is available on our website anytime you want to listen at will.illinois.edu.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the City of Urbana, presenting Urbana's Market at the Square. This Saturday's Sprouts at the Market event will offer nutrition information and offer local produce tasting for kids ages 3 to 8. The event is from 9 to 11 a.m. Information online at urbanaillinois.us/sprouts.
On tomorrow's Focus, we'll have a conversation with Dale Carpenter, professor of civil rights and civil liberties law at the University of Minnesota Law School, all about the case of Lawrence v. Texas. Back in 1998, two Houston men were arrested and charged with having sex. It was a violation at the time of Texas law. Gay rights activists took up the case, and when it was all over, the U.S. Supreme Court had overturned the law and similar laws in 12 other states. Well, that's the standard story of Lawrence v. Texas, but there is much more to the story than that. As Dale Carpenter will tell us, his book, Flagrant Conduct, presents some surprising features of the case, including the willingness of the two men charged to admit to something they didn't do in order to challenge an unjust law. It's a conversation from May of this year. That's in the 10 o'clock hour tomorrow. Then in the 11 o'clock hour, every day we interact with many other people, both friends and strangers. And although we might not be aware of it, these interactions are governed by rules, and they are very old rules. Other primates play the same games. We'll talk with Dario Maestri-Pieri from the University of Chicago. He studied primate and human social behavior for a number of years. In his book, Games Primates Play, he looks at the many parallels between the games we play in our relationships and those played by our closest animal relatives. That also a repeat broadcast from May of this year. That's what's coming up on Focus tomorrow. Stick around for the Afternoon Magazine next, an hour of news and information from NPR, the BBC, and Illinois Public Media. Among the stories we're following at this hour, former Illinois political insider Stuart Levine has been sentenced to 5.5 years in prison. He could have received a life sentence after pleading guilty to money laundering and fraud charges, but prosecutors say he deserves credit for evidence that led to former Governor Rod Blagojevich's convictions. Also, weather forecasters say much of the Midwest will likely be hotter and drier than normal into the fall. We'll have more on the latest reactions to drought conditions in Illinois and Indiana. In the commodity markets at this hour, let's give you the latest numbers, starting with Kansas City wheat for September, trading at 9.29 and a half, up 23 and a half. December wheat at 9.45 and a half, up 21 and a half. Chicago wheat for September is at 925.5, up 22.25. December wheat at 932.25, up 19.75. September corn's trading at 800, that's up 5. December corn at 785.25, up 1. August beans at 1725.25, up 41.75. September